Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
NBA All-Stars are playing next. But right outside that same city, the celebratory atmosphere would change quickly. Who watching the game with me? You know, Lil Trayvon was repping his hometown, D-Wade and LeBron. He had just came up from Miami to see his daddy, who knew such a great weekend would end badly. In a place where you move because it's safe for your family, but some people got an ingrown hate for your family. Halftime, just a short break from the slam. About to go to the store, no cuz, you want some candy? Bad, I'll grab you some Skittles, kid. I'll be right back in a little bit. I said I'll grab you some Skittles, kid. I'll probably be right back in a little bit.
Human beings in a mind. What's a mind to a king? What's a king to a god? What's a god to a non-believer who don't believe in
the storm, felt the chill of the night breeze. It seemed a little colder than before. He didn't know it was a bore, like a soldier in a war that was watching him, clocking him, thinking about stopping him, 9 milli cocking him. Who's this nigga walking through my neighborhood? He fits all the specifics of criminal statistics. He looks suspicious. 911, what's your emergency? A black man walking through my hood perfectly. Stay calm, it's a slow trade bomb, but he wanna be the hero, so he put his cape on. George Zimmerman, neighborhood block captain, loaded clocks wrapped in, fake cop hat. Got out the car, knowing what the cops ask him. They always get away, this time that will not happen.
Human beings in a mind. What's a mind to a king? What's a king to a god? What's a god to a non-believer who don't believe in anything? We make it out alive.
Didn't take his Ritalin, drunk off adrenaline, said he's making the citizens arrest. Trayvon looks at him vexed. I just walked to the store, nothing more, nothing less. Just steps from his home, he ignores his request. George grabs him, Trayvon swings and connects. Starts screaming out for help, but Zimmerman sees a threat. So he pulls out his gun and he points it at his chest. He fires, but he misses. Trayvon pleads for forgiveness. I didn't do nothing, this is senseless. But George Zimmerman was so vicious, he made sure the second shot hit him. No survivor, no witness. Trayvon never gave his cousins the Skittles. Mr. All-Star Game didn't see another dribble. And George Zimmerman wasn't even arrested. The message is only white life is protected in America.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes. and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Black in Time Enterprises, celebrating who we are by honoring who we were.
Wilfred Robinson, please come forward.
They got to him, too.
Wilfred Robinson?
Wolf, yes, Mama? You want to do what's right, and I want you to. But I want you to be a man. So you be a man right now. And from now on, no matter what happens, you'll be a man for the rest of your natural life.
Wilfred Robinson? Well, is he here or not? Now, did you know this boy, Nathaniel Hamilton?
Yes, sir. I knew Cornbread all my life, ever since I was a real little guy.
Right, on the date in question, did you see this occurrence?
Yes, sir.
Where were you?
In front of the store.
Which store?
Mr. Fred's store.
All right, Wilfred. Now, you go ahead in your own words and you tell us what you know. Don't you start at the beginning and tell us everything you know.
Well, it all started when me and Earl was watching Cornbread and the other big guys play basketball. Then it started to rain. And then we all ran down to Mr. Fred's store. Mr. Fred, he was mad at having all those kids in his store. So he began to yell in. Pretty soon it was just Cornbread, me, and Earl. And then Cornbread brought us each a pop. And, you know, he was always good to us. And he bought one for himself. And then One Eye came in.
I beg your pardon, did you say One Eye?
Yes, sir. Everybody out there knows One Eye.
I see. Go on, son.
No. Then Cornbread said that he had to get moving. So he bought another pop for himself to drink at home. And then we said that he ought to wait until it stopped raining. But he said no, that he had to get on home. And then, me and Earl, we got to arguing. We's always arguing as to how fast Cornbread could run home. And I said, maybe 10 seconds. And Cornbread laughed and said, no, about 45 seconds. And then we made sort of a bet. Then me and Earl and Mr. Fred and One Eye went out under the awning with Cornbread. Cornbread took off with his basketball under one arm and his orange pop in the other hand. Boy, you should have seen how he ran. Cornbread ran. Didn't even look like he was moving. He could sure run. And boy, was he moving. And then me and Earl, he gets to counting. While Cornbread's running, you know, and a one, and a two. And Cornbread's pumping away, and it's raining, and Cornbread's racing down the block. And then those two cops, they run into the street. And it looks like they yelled something, but I couldn't tell what it was, because It was that garbage truck grinding away. Anyhow, those two guys, they had out their guns and they shoot. And they shoot Cornbread. Then he was dead. They killed Cornbread and he wasn't doing nothing. All he was doing was he was just going home.
I don't know who's lying. But somebody is.
Kid's gotta be lying.
Counsel, do you have any questions?
Just one. Wilfred.
Hmm?
Do you know anything about Cornbread belonging to a gang?
No, sir. He didn't belong to no gang. Didn't have to. Besides, he was always playing basketball. Sometimes at night, when it was quiet, I could hear the bamming and bamming of that basketball right up against that backboard. And I knew it was Cornbread, because it couldn't be nobody else. Yep, and that bam, bam, bam would put me right to sleep. No, sir. He didn't belong in no gangs. Not Cornbread.
It took a lot of courage for you to come here.
Oh. Peace, quiet, and good order will be maintained in our city to the best of our ability. Riots, melees, and disturbances of the peace are against the interest of all our people and therefore cannot be permitted.
The jury found that they were all not guilty, not guilty, not guilty,
We've been
not
told
guilty,
it all
not
along
guilty, not guilty.
I was raised to be white, black. I was raised to be equal to anyone. Listening to you, you are so precious. I just can't believe it. I am shocked. You're scaring me.
What is he saying that you have a problem with? What is he saying that you have a problem with?
What scares us is I think we hear violence.
Thank you. Don't know what the fuck it is you talking about.
I'm so scared to go around the world next year because I was never a prejudiced person until I'm listening to you. It's really scary hearing what you're saying. I'm very scared.
What is he saying that you have a problem with? What is he saying that you have a problem with?
What scares us is...
Well, I want to come out here, first of all, to tell you that Jay is prepared for all your questions and is very much looking forward to the session. Second thing is, I want to let you know that over the next couple of weeks, there are going to obviously be a whole range of issues, immigration, economics, et cetera. We'll try to arrange a fuller press conference to address your questions. The reason I actually wanted to come out today is not to take questions, but to speak to an issue that obviously has gotten a lot of attention over the course of the last week, the issue of the Trayvon Martin ruling. I gave a preliminary statement right after the ruling on Sunday, but watching the debate over the course of the last week, I thought it might be useful for me to expand on my thoughts a little bit. First of all, I want to make sure that, once again, I send my thoughts and prayers as well as Michelle's to the family of Trayvon Martin, and to remark on the incredible grace and dignity with which they've dealt with the entire situation. I can only imagine what they're going through, and it's remarkable how they've handled it. The second thing I want to say is to reiterate what I said on Sunday, which is there are going to be a lot of arguments about the legal issues in the case. I'll let all the legal analysts and talking heads address those issues. The judge conducted the trial in a professional manner. The prosecution and the defense made their arguments. The juries were properly instructed that in a case such as this, reasonable doubt was relevant, and they rendered a verdict. And once the jury's spoken, that's how our system works. But I did want to just talk a little bit about context. and how people have responded to it and how people are feeling. When Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said that this could have been my son. Another way of saying that is Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And when you think about why, in the African-American community at least, there's a lot of pain around what happened here, I think it's important to recognize that the African-American community is looking at this issue through a set of experiences and a history that that doesn't go away. There are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. That includes me. There are very few African-American men who haven't had the experience of walking across the street and hearing the locks click on the doors of cars. That happens to me, at least before I was a senator. There are very few African-Americans who haven't had the experience of getting on an elevator and a woman clutching her purse nervously and holding her breath until she had a chance to get off. That happens often. And I don't want to exaggerate this, but those sets of experiences inform how the African-American community interprets what happened one night in Florida. And it's inescapable for people to bring those experiences to bear. The African-American community is also knowledgeable that there is a history of racial disparities in the application of our criminal laws. Everything from the death penalty to enforcement of our drug laws. And that ends up having an impact in terms of how people interpret the case. Now, this isn't to say that the African-American community is naive about the fact that African-American young men are disproportionately involved in the criminal justice system, that they're disproportionately both victims and perpetrators of violence. It's not to make excuses for that fact, although black folks do interpret the reasons for that in a historical context. They understand that some of the violence that takes place in poor black neighborhoods around the country is born out of a very violent past in this country, and that the poverty and dysfunction that we see in those communities can be traced to a very difficult history. And so the fact that sometimes that's unacknowledged adds to the frustration. And the fact that a lot of African-American boys are painted with a broad brush and the excuse is given, well, there are these statistics out there that show that African-American boys are more violent. Using that as an excuse to then see sons treated differently causes pain. I think the African-American community is also not naive in understanding that statistically, somebody like Trayvon Martin was probably statistically more likely to be shot by a peer than he was by somebody else. So folks understand the challenges that exist for African-American boys. But they get frustrated, I think, if they feel that there's no context for it, and that context is being denied. And that all contributes, I think, to a sense that if a white male teen was involved in the same kind of scenario that from top to bottom, both the outcome and the aftermath might have been different. Now, the question for me at least, and I think for a lot of folks, is where do we take this? How do we learn some lessons from this and move in a positive direction? You know, I think it's understandable that there have been demonstrations and vigils and protests, and some of that stuff is just going to have to work its way through as long as it remains nonviolent. If I see any violence, then I will remind folks that that dishonors what happened to Trayvon Martin and his family. But beyond protests or vigils, the question is, are there some concrete things that we might be able to do? I know that Eric Holder is reviewing what happened down there, but I think it's important for people to have some clear expectations here. Traditionally, these are issues of state and local government. The criminal code and law enforcement is traditionally done at the state and local levels, not at the federal levels. That doesn't mean, though, that as a nation, we can't do some things that I think would be productive. So let me just give a couple of specifics that I'm still bouncing around with my staff. You know, so we're not rolling out some five-point plan, but some areas where I think all of us could potentially focus. Number one, precisely because law enforcement is often determined at the state and local level, I think it would be productive for the Justice Department, governors, mayors, to work with law enforcement about training at the state and local levels in order to reduce the kind of mistrust in the system that sometimes currently exists. You know, when I was in Illinois, I passed racial profiling legislation, and it actually did just two simple things. One, it collected data on traffic stops and the race of the person who was stopped. But the other thing was it resourced us training police departments across the state on how to think about potential racial bias and ways to further professionalize what they were doing. And initially, the police departments across the state were resistant, but actually they came to recognize that if it was done in a fair, straightforward way, that it would allow them to do their jobs better, and communities would have more confidence in them, and in turn be more helpful in applying the law. And obviously law enforcement's got a very tough job. So that's one area where I think there are a lot of resources and best practices that could be brought to bear if state and local governments are receptive. And I think a lot of them would be. And let's figure out, are there ways for us to push out that kind of training? Along the same lines, I think it'd be useful for us to examine some state and local laws to see if they are designed in such a way that they may encourage the kinds of altercations and confrontations and tragedies that we saw in the Florida case, rather than diffuse potential altercations. I know that there's been commentary about the fact that the Stand Your Ground laws in Florida were not used as a defense in the case. On the other hand, if we're sending a message as a society in our communities that someone who is armed potentially has the right to use those firearms, even if there's a way for them to exit from a situation, is that really going to be contributing to the kind of peace and security and order that we'd like to see? And for those who resist that idea that we should think about something like these Stand Your Ground laws, I just ask people to consider, if Trayvon Martin was of age and armed, could he have stood his ground on that sidewalk? And do we actually think that he would have been justified in shooting Mr. Zimmerman, who had followed him in a car, because he felt threatened? And if the answer to that question is at least ambiguous, then it seems to me that we might want to examine those kinds of laws. Number three, and this is a long-term project, we need to spend some time in thinking about how do we bolster and reinforce our African-American boys. And this is something that Michelle and I talk a lot about. There are a lot of kids out there who need help, who are getting a lot of negative reinforcement. And is there more that we can do to give them a sense that their country cares about them and values them and is willing to invest in them? I'm not naive about the prospects of some grand new federal program. I'm not sure that that's what we're talking about here, but I do recognize that as president I've got some convening power, and that there are a lot of good programs that are being done across the country on this front. And for us to be able to gather together business leaders and local elected officials and clergy and celebrities and athletes and figure out how are we doing a better job helping young African-American men feel that they're a full part of this society, and that they've got pathways and avenues to succeed. Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good outcome from what was obviously a tragic situation. And we're going to spend some time working on that and thinking about that. And then finally, I think it's going to be important for all of us to do some soul searching. There have been talk about should we convene a conversation on race. I haven't seen that be particularly productive when politicians try to organize conversations. They end up being stilted and politicized, and folks are locked into the positions they already have. On the other hand, in families and churches and workplaces, there's a possibility that people are a little bit more honest, and at least you ask yourself your own questions about am I wringing as much bias out of myself as I can? Am I judging people as much as I can based on not the color of their skin but the content of their character? That would, I think, be an appropriate exercise in the wake of this tragedy. And let me just leave you with a final thought that as difficult and challenging as this whole episode has been for a lot of people, I don't want us to lose sight that things are getting better. Each successive generation seems to be making progress in changing attitudes when it comes to race. Doesn't mean we're in a post-racial society. It doesn't mean that racism is eliminated. But you know, when I talk to Malia and Sasha, and I listen to their friends and I see them interact, they're better than we are. They're better than we were on these issues. And that's true in every community that I've visited all across the country. So, we have to be vigilant, and we have to work on these issues, and those of us in authority should be doing everything we can to encourage the better angels of our nature as opposed to using these episodes to heighten divisions. But we should also have confidence that kids these days, I think, have more sense than we did back then, and certainly more than our parents did or our grandparents did, and that along this long, difficult journey, we're becoming a more perfect union. Not a perfect union, but a more perfect union. All right? Thank you, guys.
If you're 17 and you wearing a hoodie, you're on the phone talking to your shorty. Make no mistake, there's one like you in every city. You know the story. He gon' creep up from behind, have you leave her before your time. By the time Popo show up, he gon' say he was so scared that he shot you up. He could've been the next president. He could've been the next Steve Jobs. He could've been the next astronaut. Someone said we get justice. Neighborhood watcher. If you're 17 with a hoodie on, watch out for the neighborhood watcher. If you at the right neighborhood at the wrong time, neighborhood watcher. This might be your last call to your girlfriend, the neighborhood watcher. Yeah. When I feel for you, if you 17.
Being viewed suspiciously. We all know that young African-Americans American men disproportionately have involvement in criminal activities and violence for a lot of reasons, a lot of it having to do with poverty, a lot of it having to do with disruptions in their neighborhoods and their communities, and, failing schools and all those things. And that's no excuse, but what we also believe in is that people, everybody, should be treated fairly, and the system should work for everyone. And so what I'm trying to do is just make sure that we have a conversation and that we're all asking ourselves, are there some things that we can do to foster better understanding and to make sure that we don't have laws in place that encourage the kind of violent encounter that we saw there that resulted in tragedy.
Let me ask you something.
Escape route to be out without a doubt. Scot free, so don't even think.
And now still more major news. An exclusive interview with the woman who heard a Sanford vigilante gun down a teenager on February 26th.
Sanford police have said George Zimmerman's claims of self-defense kept them from arresting him. And now 10 days later, he's still free. That's fueling outrage around Central Florida and the nation. Channel 9's Darlene Jones has been breaking new developments on this story from the beginning. And she talked to the people who really know what happened. She leads off our team coverage with that exclusive interview tonight. And Darlene, police only took a 2 or 3 sentence statement from this woman. How long did you talk to her?
Vanessa, I spent 30 minutes with her on camera, and she told us her entire story. After we heard her out, we reached out to Sanford police here at headquarters, who told us they had been swamped with media requests and warned us we might not hear back from them today.
The cry stopped as soon as the gun went off, so I know it was the little boy.
Mary Kutcher said that cry for help got her attention the day 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was shot and killed in her backyard by George Zimmerman, a neighborhood vigilante. Until now, she's ignored repeated attempts by national and local media to share what she saw, partially out of fear.
So we said everything okay, and he just looked at us. And some asked him again, what's up? What's going on? Everything okay? And he just said, call the police. Kind of nonchalantly, like, leave me alone.
According to this partial police report, Kutcher is one of 6 eyewitnesses Sanford police took a statement from that night. Kutcher said it was short and police never questioned her in detail until after she repeatedly reached out to them.
Blew us off. And I called him back again and I said, I know this was not self-defense. There was no punching, no hitting going on at the time, no wrestling.
Kutcher believes whatever confrontation there was, it ended before they got to her backyard, and she believes Zimmerman continued to chase Martin as he tried to get home. Police said Zimmerman had a bloody nose and blood on the back of his head, and he told police he was yelling for someone to help, but no one would. Kutcher believes even if Martin got the best of Zimmerman, it's no excuse to kill an unarmed teenager half his size.
I assumed he's going to be arrested. Common sense will tell you. And he wasn't.
As I said, we spent an hour with her, 30 minutes of that on camera at 6, why she decided to speak out now. Reporting live in Seminole County in Sanford, Darlene Jones, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
It happened like right when the sun goes down completely, so it was really dark and there was no moonlight out because it had just rained and the only one porch light was on. I was walking my dog and I heard screaming when I walked outside, so I went to where I heard it and it was behind about 20 to 25 yards from behind my house, and I looked and I saw someone laying on the ground and I heard someone yelling for help, and then my dog, he got off the leash and I went to go grab him, and then when I grabbed my dog I heard a shot, and right when I heard the shot the screaming stopped, so I went inside and I told my sister and she called 911. The police arrived and I later found out that the person who got shot died. I'll think about what if I would have went over there if the person still would have got shot. No, I just think that sometimes people get stereotyped and I fit into this stereotype as the person who got shot.
About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart, and tell me about that.
Well, you know, I think all of us were troubled by what happened, and any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy,
right.
You're going to mess up. And you won't always have the best judgment. But what I think all of us agree to is that we should have a criminal justice system that's fair, that's just. And what I wanted to try to explain was why this was a particularly sensitive topic for African-American families because, you know, a lot of people who have sons know the experience they had of being followed or being viewed suspiciously. We all know that young African-American men disproportionately have involvement in criminal activities and violence for a lot of reasons, a lot of it having to do with poverty, a lot of it having to do with disruptions in their neighborhoods and their communities, and, failing schools and all those things. And that's no excuse, but what we also believe in is that people, everybody, should be treated fairly and the system should work for everyone. And so what I'm trying to do is just make sure that... Make sure that we have a conversation and that we're all asking ourselves, are there some things that we can do to foster better understanding and to make sure that we don't have laws in place that encourage the kind of violent encounter that we saw there that resulted in tragedy.
Let me ask you something.
By what happened, and any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy,
right.
You're going to mess up, and you won't always have the best judgment. What I think all of us agree to is that we should have a criminal justice system that's fair, that's just. And what I wanted to try to explain was why this was a particularly sensitive topic for African-American families because, you know, a lot of people who have sons know the experience they had of being followed or being viewed suspiciously. We all know that young African-American men disproportionately have involvement in criminal activities and violence for a lot of reasons, a lot of it having to do with poverty, a lot of it having to do with disruptions in their neighborhoods and their communities, and, failing schools and all those things. And that's no excuse, but what we also believe in is that people, everybody, should be treated fairly and the system should work for everyone. And so what I'm trying to
Police Department. Line is being recorded.
Now let's put it all in perspective before the outrage burns out misdirected. What can we do so our community's protected? I believe that should be our main objective. While we full of rage and we want to make a difference, let's do more than protest. Let's make a commitment to be proactive, not just emotional reactive. Move like G, never passive. Organize state teams, martial arts classes. Get to the gun range and make your aim active. Self-defense is a must by any tactic. Security protocol, make it a daily practice. They say I look suspicious, I get it all the time. Pro-black face tatted when they drop dimes. Follow me, get on your jack, tell them to come get me. You better get your gun, you be the judge, jury. Yeah. We gotta make better war moves. Police the pigs, polish our own tools. Fight back, become a force to be reckoned. Let them feel the consequence, pulling that weapon. They do what they wanna do, who they think they can. In a stand, it's no respect for the black man. What's the solution? The ballot of the bullet, G. Give me that pistol, that vote never give us. Free. I tell the young people, go ahead, protest. Petition, picket sign, citizens arrest. Just know we get war, so get your game face on. Hoodie on, I bomb first, betray law.
I'm tired of the marching, the rallying, and the protesting. We hooping and hollering, still we getting no justice. To Daniel Diallo, Bell, Grant, and Trayvon. It's the free mix on your radio station. Turn it up so you can drown out all the media hype. We plot, planning, and strategizing, ready to fight. The government ain't gonna stop it as long as they make a profit off our criminalization. Our people gonna be a target. Justin sipping window, Allen, who gon' be next? Fuck the talking, get some power, then we get some respect. When I die, don't put me on a shirt, my nigga. Be a revolutionary, make them hurt, my nigga. That's a quote from New York Money, that's my RBG family. Sick man, Mike Flow, most justice insanity. Cause we do the same thing, expecting different results. I'm checking the vital signs, but I ain't getting no post.
Please, a view from a true G perspective. These mic machines to pose all the questions. Say your point in here to uphold justice, but it get denied, yo, they cheat and they lie, folk. Hate views, fake moves, and wild hostile. Young black world in a struggle for survival. Great stress and effect, disrespect, disconnect. Guns and wives, skittles and nice teeth. Gunshots and blood that breaks the night breeze. The several point is judged, it might be Nazis. Insecurity, identity doubt. You think that they see a neighbor, they see a villain is out. The standard answer, it was random police movement and conclusive confusion. The present news clips, callous bullshit. Every talking head is clueless. Many suckle channels stupid. Sick in the town, we know it's been that. It's time to fix that for every place we live at. Put in work where we are to change the whack track. They make you holler in the hour where they say that. They shooting, made you die. I act as if the murder innocence is not crime. Killers on the run, watch them and your time's up. Mr. Murderer, where you hiding at? They shooting, made you die. To act as if the murder innocence is not crime. Killers on the run, watch them and your time's up. I hope you hear this, right where you hiding at. Trayvon,
who are you?
Trayvon, Trayvon,
who are you?
Trayvon.
About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart, and tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened. Any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy, you're going to mess up. And you won't always have the best judgment. What I think all of us agree to is that we should have a criminal justice system that's fair, that's just. And what I wanted to try to explain was why this was a particularly sensitive topic for African-American families, because...
No one questions you. If I hit you, I'll
Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart. And tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened. Any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy, you're going to mess up. And you won't always have the best judgment. What I think all of us agree to is that we should have a criminal justice system that's fair, that's just. And what I wanted to try to explain was why this was a particularly sensitive topic for African-American families, because,
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the
Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart. And tell me about that.
Well, I think all of
that's the sound of the police.
About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart. And tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened, and. Any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy, you're going to mess up. And you won't always have the best judgment. But
I've been taught to respect my elders and behave. Even if when they were young, they sold slaves. Truth and understanding is what I crave in the land of the thief, home of the slave. Turn your page to a brief demonstration. It's now in 90, it's strictly information I'm giving. Teaching on a regular basis. Today's lecture is about the racist. We're not out to exaggerate or diss them, but show the symptoms and facts of racism. Understand, the racists ain't equal. There's about five different types of racist people. First of the five different types of cases is the individual brought up racist. Here you have young men and women brought up in the great white way opinion. This opinion introduced by the parents to the civilized becomes transparent. A civilized man could look through the faces, make the analysis and see the races. Number two case, which all must hear, is the individual racist out of fear. Here you have people that fear the African and conjure up new ways of trapping them. Number three is the unconscious racist. Not knowing they're racist, they invade the spaces. They say, I'm not a racist, I'm not a bigot, yet they allow us to go on and won't admit it. Number four is the money racist, the one that used the topics of sheer economics. They say, owning a business isn't for the black man. He don't want that, yet they went and took his land. Damn, that's like a rock in a hard place. You don't have your land, yet this ain't your space. America was built by every other race except the European. It runs this place. What a waste. America's doomed to be overthrown by the righteous real soon. But last but not least, racial prejudice. It's the black man speaking out of ignorance. Whitey this and Ching Chow that. It's not how the intelligent man acts. You can't blame the whole white race for slavery, because this ain't the case. A large sum of white people died with blacks, trying hard to fight racial attacks. The media wants you to think that no white really fought and died for civil rights. But once we have a true sense of history, you'll see this too is a mystery. If black and white didn't argue the most, they can clearly see the government screwing them both.
About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart. And tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened. And Any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy,
right.
You're going to mess up. And you won't always have the best judgment. What I think all of us agree to is that we should have a criminal justice system that's fair, that's just. And what I wanted to try to explain was why this was a particularly sensitive topic for African-American families, because you know a lot of people who have sons know the experience they had of being followed or being viewed suspiciously. We all know that young African-American men disproportionately have involvement in criminal activities and violence for a lot of reasons, a lot of it having to do with poverty, a lot of it having to do with disruptions in their neighborhoods and their communities, and, failing schools and all those things. And that's no excuse, but what we also believe in is that people, everybody, should be treated fairly and the system should work for everyone. And so what I'm trying to do is just make sure that we have a conversation and that we're all asking ourselves, are there some things that we can do to foster better understanding and to make sure that we don't have laws in place that encourage the kind of violent encounter that we saw there that resulted in tragedy.
Let me ask you something. About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart, and tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened, any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect.
I was raised to be white, black. I was raised to be equal to anyone. Listening to you, you are so precious. I just can't believe it. I am shocked. You're staring at me.
What is he saying that you have a problem with? What is he saying that you have a problem with? What scares us is I think we hear violence.
About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart, and tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened, any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking.
Peace, quiet, and good order will be maintained in our city to the best of our ability. Riots, melees, and disturbances of the peace are against the interest of all our people and therefore cannot be permitted.
The jury found that they were all not guilty, not guilty, not guilty.
About the Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart, and tell me about that.
Well, I think all of us were troubled by what happened, any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy,
right.
You're going to mess up. And you.
in here right now with tape decks, turn them on and put them on record.
Yeah.
I'll give you a second. I want to add authenticity to your tape. So when it's sold out in the street, you all can know this was a real party. These are poems circulating throughout the nation. Everybody's bad and everybody's tough. But how many people are intelligent enough to open up their eyes and see through the lies, discipline themselves, yourself to stay alive? Not many. That's why the universe sent me today on this stage with this to say. The rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer. In the final hour, many heads will lose power. What does the rich versus poor really mean? Psychologically, it means you gotta pick your team. When someone says the rich gets richer, visualize wealth and put yourselves in the picture. The rich get richer because they work toward rich. The poor get poorer because they mind can't switch from the ghetto. Let go. It's not a novelty. You can love your neighborhood without loving poverty. Follow me. Every mother, father, son, daughter. There's no reason to fear the new world order. We must order the whole new world to pay us. The new world order and the old state chaos. The big brother watching over you is a lie, you see. Hip hop could build its own secret society. But first, you and I got to unify. Stop the negativity and control our creativity. The rich is getting richer. So why we ain't richer? Could it be we still thinking like niggas? Educate yourselves. Make your worldview bigger. Visualize wealth and put yourselves in the picture.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent.
You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Klipas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice.
Are you the parent of a troubled teen, or you just want to have a closer relationship with your child? If so, sign up for our free webinar called 5 Easy Tips to Effective Communication with Your Teen right now, hosted by teen expert Louise Henry. Log on to successfulteenparenting.com/webinar.
Everybody, yeah, that was the LaBelle's messing with my mind. Yeah, we just wrapped it up with our little Trayvon Martin tribute. We had a host, a guest, that was supposed to be on our show today, and he didn't call in, so I had to continue Trayvon Martin tribute. I did play that Barack Obama, Jay Leno thing out, huh? I mean, I had to play that because, you know, he was one way one day, somewhere else the next day. But coming up right now, we got the executive director of the world-famous Harold Washington Culture Center on the line. And they just been nominated for how many? How many people?
Seven.
Well, right on. Thank you for the loud reply. I got some cool people in the spot. Like I said, we ain't giving the script. That's why you gotta definitely get a TV up in here. We got Jim Lee Tillman, my little sister, on the line, and we're gonna see what's going on at the HWCC. What's going on, Jim Lee?
Hey, how's everybody doing? Thanks for having me on today.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to have you on. First, we would like to know into the song. Damn. Well, so instead of messing with our mind, Jim Lee, we'd like to know what is going on with these nominations, what you've been nominated for, and what's really going on out there.
Okay, well, we have completed our first full year series of Broadway in Bronzeville, and the last time I believe I was on the show, we were calling you from the red carpet in New York at the Tony Awards, where we took a team of students from the Ain't Misbehaving crew to get a chance to experience a live Broadway set of productions. So while we were there, they got an opportunity to see the Motown show. They got a chance to see Lucky Guy, Kinky Boots, Annie, and it was a really amazing time. And that was on June 9th. And then we opened up the following weekend with Ain't Misbehaving, directed by Cassandra Bell. And Cassandra Bell is a neo-director when it comes to live musical theater. This was her first production, and we are blessed to walk away with what is considered the Tonys of theater in Chicago, of black theater in Chicago, seven Black Theater Alliance Awards. And so we're nominated, and we're in very good company with longstanding theaters that have been in existence in well over 25 and 40 years. So we want to say hats off to the cast of Ain't Misbehaving and the great director Cassandra Bell, for we are nominated for Best Ensemble Cast of Ain't Misbehaving, Best Leading Man twice. Marcus Dickens as well as Aramie Payton were both nominated for Best Leading Man in the play, which is unprecedented to have one production have two Best Leading Males nominated at the same time. We have Best Choreography that we were nominated for, and that is Cassandra Bell nominated for choreography. Best Director, Cassandra Bell. Most Promising Actor, Aramie Payton. We're really excited about this, and we appreciate Chicago for showing us so much love, as we are the babies on the block, but we have so much more to present with Broadway and Bronzeville.
That is hot. That is hot. I can't say no more, but that is hot. Let me ask you something. Now, on the Broadway and Bronzeville package you have, what plays were listed in, I know you probably only got one nominated, but what other plays that Broadway and Bronzeville produced this year?
Well, we opened up Broadway and Bronzeville this year with Black Nativity, and then we continued on with Imitation of Life. We went on further to do the children's production of Annie and April, and we closed out with Ain't Misbehaving.
All right. Now, Ain't Misbehaving was hot. That was a hot play, very hot play. How did your cast feel about the nomination?
Everybody's elated. They're very excited. We're getting set up for High School Musical right now. I'm actually at the building, just leaving the rehearsal of High School Musical, as well as Divas Live, the musical, which is playing this Monday and Tuesday, the 12th and the 13th, at the Harold Washington Cultural Center. So we believe that every instrument should have a heartbeat, and every toe should have a step in it, and every voice should have a song to sing. One thing we believe in at the Harold Washington Cultural Center is using theater as therapy as well as grief counseling. We say leave it all on the stage or leave it all in the seat. We want you to just leave it all where you can, because theater is supposed to be able to move your soul to the next level. When you come there, you're supposed to be able to feel good about it. The one thing that thrived in America while there was an economic downturn was live Broadway musicals. Broadway musicals was a billion-dollar industry during the toughest of economic times in America, and for us to be involved with that, bringing quality theater to the south side of Chicago as it pertains to live Broadway musicals is an amazing feat, and we want to thank those that have blazed the trail, and we also want to thank Ife Butler and John Crowley and those that came out and did master classes, Joel Hall and the crew from the Porchlight Theater. Porchlight Theater is actually presenting Ain't Misbehaving next February, and they came out to see our little community theater in this presentation of Ain't Misbehaving and got blown away, because our little community theater is the largest black-owned theater in the city of Chicago.
Now, that is hot. When will high school musical be playing? When would that be played?
High school musical plays in November of this year, and Divas Live musical is Monday and Tuesday. There's also a few productions in between, Going Home with Duke, and I'm going to be on your show later on in the next few weeks. We're getting ready for the Marvin Sapp comedy show, where Marvin Sapp Ministries, who's known primarily for gospel, will be presenting a comedy show at the Air Washington Culture Center on September 28th. All our shows are listed on TicketWeb.com, and if you want, you can call 773-373-1900 for more details about how you can get involved with the show, how you can come see the show, and how you can further support the center. If you want to leave a charitable donation to the Harold Washington Cultural Center, you can just bring your donation into Seaway in Chicago on 35th and King Drive, 87th in the Dan Ryan, or 87th in Cottage Grove.
Question, politically speaking. with the Harold Washington Cultural Center, because as I look at the nomination sheet here, it says Cassandra Bell nominated for Best Choreography from the Harold Washington Cultural Center. Now, seeing how the Cultural Center was getting negative press and all about being flouted and not enough activities going on, do you think this publicity will kill the detractors and shed a positive spotlight on your theater and what you've been doing there?
We believe that, and that's a good question, we believe that the nominations, it's a very humbling moment. What we found at the closing evening of Ain't Misbehaving was that all of our peers in theater came out, members from Broadway in Chicago, members from the League of Chicago Theaters, the African American Arts Alliance, and Steppenwolf. We believed in Don't Believe Me, Just Watch Me. We sat up there, and we had our rehearsals, and we rehearsed day in and day out, and we put a lot of love onto that stage, and it made them have to take notes, stand tall, and pay attention to what we were doing. And so we were nominated by a crew of our peers, which is pretty much what the Black Theater Alliance, we're getting nominated by other theater companies, and that speaks volumes. So even speaking more than just to the critics, it speaks volumes that that our peers nominated us.
Now, let me ask you this question now. I'm looking at the nomination sheets, and I see John Ruffin on there, and that's his name. And Will Mary on there too. I understand that they came out of the Cultural Center now. Is it true that this Black Theater Alliance Awards has a lot of Harold Washington Cultural Center influence involved? And are there any other people that you can help us, that you can assist us in that I might miss that off?
I'm sorry, I missed the question. I'm sorry.
There were a lot of nominees here that I see that have connections with the Harold Washington Cultural Center. I see John Ruffin. He's nominated for Dreamgirls, and that was a play.
That was in 2012. Now, what I want you to know is, in 2012, the Harold Washington Cultural Center was nominated for Dreamgirls, and we also produced Color Purple for them. And so that was
the question I was saying,
if you see Dreamgirls, that's last year's award series. That wasn't from this year. This year would probably have like Kinky Boots, it might have Will Rusher, Meeting Dorothy Dogs, those kind of shows.
So listen, what I was saying was this. Now, my producers gave me my cue card here. Now, what I was trying to say, Ms. Lita, was that we see John Ruffin. He's nominated. Is he nominated from Dreamgirls at the Marriott? One of the actors nominated at the Marriott for Dreamgirls? I see that's nominated. And my question was, I see Britt Baer also. I see someone that also teaches tap at the Harold Washington Cultural Center. And I know one of John Ruffin's plays is nominated. What I'm saying is, it seems like the Black Theater Awards.
I want to make a correction there. The show that was nominated at the Marriott is a whole different theater troupe that put that production on. That wasn't John Ruffin that did the one there. That was a different theater company altogether. That was the Marriott, actually the Marriott, they put it on themselves. Now, Real Barrett did a, he's one of our instructors, so they were definitely nominated. But Tonsenisa Wilson, you might see her nominated for the other Cinderella. She, the first time she ever performed in a musical was on our stage. She had no acting experience until she performed on our stage. So we're really excited about Tonsenisa, and we want to thank her. She was one of the dream girls. Tonsenisa played, she played Sheree, the one that was like, this ain't no party. She's the one who used to cheat with Jimmy, and she left Jimmy. So she's one of the ones that came from out of our camp, so we're really proud for her. And, you know, the great thing about it is showing the connectivity. The closing night, Jackie Taylor actually came from the Black Ensemble to the Harold Washington Culture Center and gave kudos to our actress and told us one day we may be competing with her, and that day came a little sooner than many expected.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm hearing that you might be bringing your father on board for musical director, seven-time award-winning Jimmy Tillman. Is that true? Is there any rumors about that? That we're hearing in underground?
Well, at this time, he's actually our contractor for all the musicians to make sure that our relationship with the council, the Federation of Chicago Musicians is intact. He handles all the contracting for them and oversees the contracting of the musical director. So he's more of a musical artistic director consultant.
We're seeing here that this new Black Theater Alliance, is that, am I saying it right? Black Theater Alliance Award is almost like got like a Tillman taint on it. We know your father has been awarded and nominated several times from there. Now, as a writer, producer, director, and now your company is being nominated, directed. And then we got people that were from your company also being nominated, directed. It's as if the Tillmans has painted the whole Black Theater Award red. Am I stretching too far with that? Okay, what I'm saying is that it seems as if, boy, Heavy Petey's question, it seems as if that your father here, multi-dominated, multi-award-winning, Black Theater nominator and Jeff Award winner, is an alumni of the Black Theater Award. Now he has his daughter and her company winning being nominated and hopefully winning numerous awards. And there are offshoots of people that came from your company that's also nominated, winning numerous awards. So it's as if the Tillman stains at the Black Theater Award roots run deep. Am I stretching too far with that, or am I just rubbing the Tillman angle? Tell me about that.
I would say that we really appreciate how hard my dad, Jimmy Tillman, worked on the last production, the maintenance behavior, to pull in some of the names of the people in the relationships that we had at the Goodman Theater to make sure that these master classes took place. And we're looking forward to working with him closely in the future on a lot of great upcoming productions that you guys will be hearing about in the very, very, very near future.
Yes, 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 yes. Two more questions. And one last one is, one of the questions for the last one is that it seems that you got a lot of students also working on some of the production, lighting, arranging, and music. It's like you have an apprenticeship program. And it seems like here you hear a lot of people on the news and congressmen and politicians talking about how people might get no trade working or union because it's not an apprenticeship program. A lot of young is involved in the team, so they can be able to do a lot of work. That's commendable for all you. Okay. Now, what do you expect as a teacher? But what do you see for the Harold Culture Center, and you only got seven.
What do I see after we're done with this next seven and expanding the program? I want to make sure I heard the question because I lost.
This ain't no we're not on Nightline. This ain't Meet the Press.
Okay.
You know, you walk down the street, just let it roll. Just let it roll, sis.
Okay. Well, I think that the thing that's most important to us at the center is that each individual artist understands their entrepreneurial gift and the brand development as who they are as an artist, and everywhere they are, they're the brand that they take with them. But we're the ones that's giving them their launch. We believe in giving them an opportunity to grow and go and be able to come back and endow. It's almost the Second City model. It works at the Lyric Opera House. It works at some of the greatest theaters throughout the world. And oftentimes theater companies want their talent to just stay with them, and they get upset when the talent gets cultivated and wants to move on, when actually that's your opportunity and chance to be able to expand your brand and to keep growing the talent that you have there. So we're very proud of everything that's going on at the building. We're very proud of what's going on. You know, I appreciate my brother Bimaji for working very closely at streamlining costs when it comes to sound design, lighting design, and that whole thing. It really goes very far with the budget development when you have somebody who's looking out for the best interest of the building as well as the production. So we're very grateful for that and very thankful to him for that. This summer we have our run the show program, and the first show that they're going to get an opportunity to run is the Divas Live, and Run the Show runs for approximately 30 weeks. So the first 8 weeks started this fall, and then we're going to go into, I mean, that started this summer, and then we're already in production for, High School Musical, and we're looking at taking home some more awards. Just stay tuned, because the African American Arts Alliance Awards start to come out, as well as the Jeff White. It's been an amazing opportunity to talk to y'all tonight, and I want to thank y'all for having me on.
Hey, hold on, but one more thing for you, don't you feel that this 7-time nomination for your theater is like vindication for the proponents that said that the theater was a boondoggle and is not doing too much for the community and not being recognized, but by these awards, that the acknowledgement and recognition is being, besides that, it was well overdue, but besides you getting recognition, don't you feel that it's a great feather in your cap for your distractors?
I think that what it is that it's an eye-opener for those that weren't sure and were not aware. A detractor and a hater is going to find something to detract and hate about, regardless of the changes and leaps and bounds that you make. So what's important is for us to lay the foundation and the predicate for those that were misguided or that misunderstood. It's those that did not know, and it's a feather in the cap to those who supported us. It's a feather in their cap for them that have supported us to show, you know, that they're waving their flag of greatness for the productions that we're putting forward. So it's like being on the right team. So it's not really even about the detractors or those that had something negative or ill to say. It's more so about those that didn't know, they're finding out, and then those that have supported us have something to be proud of. We share this nomination, and this is a small victory on some scales, but a major victory on many others.
Yes, no. Well, you know, like I said, one small step for man, one big foot in the asshole for detractors. That's how I say it. Now, we can take one step to humbleness, but we can put one big foot in the asshole for all those who said that it was a boondoggle on the 7. All those who said Lita Tillman was not doing nothing that she should be removed from the theater. For all those who said that they're not doing what they said they were doing. And for those people who came on stage with remarks saying that one day y'all might take this little petty little anti petticoat junction spot and put it against mine. But we will see. When the war show, Ebony? We will see. 10-1. 10-1 when the battle rings. Because, you know, even though these awards, everybody, aren't fun and jest, because you like to be nominated in the halls with your peers for the work that you have done. And all the actors, producers, arrangers, composers from the Harold Washington Cultural Center love to be acknowledged for the work that they've done and the stuff that they have put on. With all of that being said, since you're finally kicking ass, if you're finally getting acknowledged, and they might not bow down, they might not, you might play the humble pie. You know, you might humble pie for all those who tried to hold back the contracts and try to shut you down. You might want to play the humble pie that everybody want to buy up your mortgage they going in and put out. But let me tell you, these seven nominations right here, they got all the detractors and all the distraction away. Now what they going to say? What are the ETAs of the world going to say? What are the EETs of the world going to say? What are all the theaters now going to say that you are here? Do you know now that you are now, like I told you, I'm your father. I said now they are stepping in the realm of the real. There's no more. This is not amateur Apollo. No. Right now, if you say we're taking one small step, I'll take that because it's always one small step for me. One big foot pass for Patricia Dow and all those other people who would like to come on, pull funds, take funds, and try to wait it out. How can you wait award-winning program and award-winning executive director? Now, how can they say something when now you are in the realm of the real and you can put this in your pipe and smoke it? You are now the executive director of the award-winning nomination Harold Washington Cultural Center. Do you know that, little lady?
It is. I'm taking it all in. And the thing about it is, now what I think is that it's going to fight. The fight is going to get harder because the target has just gotten bigger for a different reason. And as a result of the target getting a little bigger, I just have to be more diligent in what we do, why we do it, and how we do it. So it's just the work is just beginning because this is good work that we've been doing. And now that we have been acknowledged at this level of our peers, we just have to work that harder to, you know, you're only as good as your junior, you know, the sophomore jinx. We don't want to look up and then there's a sophomore jinx. We want to just keep cranking it out great. And then, you know, when they start talking about Broadway and Bronze, 25 years in the making, then that's when I will definitely be ready to.
Yeah, Melita, I just have two cans of Rip It, and my caffeine high just shot down. I'm going to say it again. When you can nominate the other Cinderella that's been rocking since 1985, what you mean by sophomore jinx? In this world of the realm, you can have one hit single and reproduce it all over again to a brand new audience and still go gold. Listen, somebody said you can twine, somebody said you can Alvin cast this and twine, time it all the way to the bank. So there is,
there is no one small stamp and where can we? How about this one?
No. Look. All those people who said we ain't nowhere, we're lost, we're defeated, we can't do anything, get rid of that girl, Jamelita. Oh, hell no, she's not qualified. What can she run? What can she do? Get it away from her now.
I say that the reason why they were saying that is because they were saying that because they knew my pedigree. They knew what I was able to do. They knew what I was capable of. And that's the reason why they wanted to try to crush our spirit and crush our ability early on and put that negative out. And they were trying to frame us with a noose around our neck. And, you know, our guy's an awesome guy, and that wasn't allowed to happen. And we were able to bob and weave on some Capoeira type bobbing and weaving, and now we're able to come out the gate swinging. So we're very proud of that.
Well, check this out, Julie. You know, you know your big brother here is I'm worldwide, well known on the web, and
yes,
we got worldwide web. We got people from France and Germany chipping in, and they saying this now. They came over and saw the play, and they said they really enjoyed it, and they glad that you still in that you still hanging in there, and they said keep still hanging in there. And they told me, no. They weren't aware. They told me to play this cup for you. Hold on, Jimmy. Hold on. They're going to play this cup for you.
Okay.
Hold on. Everything got, when you come back with this cut, I tell him that, Evan. He said, hey, let it go nowhere. Hold on. Hold on, my little sister. Now, I want to get this because that's NG Black from France, Ebony. Now, NG Black from France, chat us up. He's up at 4 o'clock in the morning listening to the show. So I like to get this shit in real fast. He might go to sleep on us. NG Black, this song, he told me to play for you, Jamelita. NG Black in France told me to hit you up with this. Let me know what you think about Jamelita.
I'm in my zone, I'm feeling it. Stop blowing my buzz, quit killing it. So buy another round and try to shut us down. About an hour ago, but we still in this bitch. We still in this bitch. We still in this bitch. We turn this shit up loud and buy another round. Pull up in that automatic cook up. Be rich, pull up in that rooster till we wake the fucking hood up. Got all these pounds of ganja, I work out, I'm doing cushions. Bobby Banders in the building, pop that pussy, throw a foot up in the air. One time for a nigga like me with a squad like this, where the team so strong and the flow so cold, ain't nothing but some bad bitches in my clique. What's up, Eastside?
What's up, Eastside?
We in it big.
We in it big.
They think they singing
me,
but they ain't seen shit.
Man, they ain't seen shit.
Girls on the pole yelling, make me rich. Girls on my shows wanna take my pick. Yeah, we can do this here all night. Can't tell me nothing, can't tell me shit. All in my zone, all on my own. Open that pack, rolling that strong. And we still up in this bitch. Won't turn down, won't go home. Yeah. I'm in my zone, I'm feeling it. Stop blowing my buzz, quit killing it. So buy another round. They tried to shut us down about an hour ago, but we still in this bitch.
Don't kill my vibe, I don't blow my high, just blow my guy. I'm so paid, I'm so fly, yo baby daddy, dear respect me, black, yeah, I said no lie. I'm on my square, blowing circles in the air. Her that purple, I'm a boss and you a worker. Listen here, boy, don't make me hurt you. You want trouble, I got plenty. How you want it? Bullet semen. I'm so rich, so all that fuckboy shit, you kick it, don't offend me. Don't get killed off in it, bitch. I spend meals all on this shit. Boy, it been 11 years of this shit. Look at me now, stealing it, bitch. Yeah, I stand tall, no can fall. You pussy ass nigga can't touch G. See me, don't speak, ain't nothing G. I'm in my zone, nigga, don't fuck with me. Aye.
I'm in my zone, I'm feeling it. Stop blowing my buzz, quit killing it. So buy another round. They tried to shut us down about an hour ago, but we still in this bitch.
Me and all my niggas, all these bad bitches, all this free liquor. Surrounded by so many women, one of these hoes might be your wife. She looking for a nigga that's ballin', so tonight might be her night. You know me, I say son, low key, I threw tuition at Onyx. Flip money fast like Sonic, rich nigga, I speak Ebonics. Got a new car, I pay cash, got a new crib with a weed lab. Chris Bills, I need that. Fuck your team with a free set. 100 deep in VIP, niggas always hate. I came in with a bunch of goons and I'm leaving out with this lady. I got your boo in my Bugatti, she bout to swallow my baby. My system loud, my weed loud, no hard clippers, I'm faded. Trippy.
I'm in my zone, I'm feeling it. Stop blowing my buzz, quit killing it. So buy another round, they tried to shut us down about an hour ago, but we still in this bitch.
Yes, they tried to shut us down about an hour ago, but yes, we are still in this female dog with heat. Now, executive director of the award-winning nominated Harold Washington Cultural Center, my producer told me to tell, what was that message you sent me, Ebony? Let the people know how they can support the award-winning, seven-time nominated, Black Theater Award-winning nominating Cultural Center. How can it help support the theater and make sure that we stay still in this bitch?
Well, they can go to Seaway on 35th, 87th in Chicago, in the Dan Ryan, or 87th in Cottage Grove. They can go onto our website and click our PayPal link. They can stop by and buy some tickets on TicketWeb.com and buy some tickets to the shows. That's always a basic fundamental way that they can support what we're doing, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, that's hot. Listen, I'm gonna let you go because I got a couple of minutes. I'm going to jump on Bobby Rush for a second. But listen, me, Ebony, Jameer, you know, we're trying to take over Homecoming. We need you to link up and do a little Tillman link up. We're trying to have this live little hotel pool party. Get up with your Ebony sister and help us put the little plan together. But anyway, all we want to say is, hey, Jamalita, they can't shut us down.
Hey,
No. See, listen, here it is, 213. We're in the year six. 6 years ago, they tried to shut us down. Here we are, 6 years ago, they tried to shut us down. 6 years ago, they're still talking stuff. And 6 years later, we're all falling down. So, listen, everybody, come on out to what we got coming up next, Jamalita.
We got Divas Live. It's two matinee shows. $10. Tickets are only $10. $10 on Monday the 12th, Tuesday the 13th. And then we're going to be bringing you Marvin Sapp's Marvin Sapp Ministries, a Christian ethical comedy show, September 28th. And then we're going to – oh, we've got some surprises coming up in October. And then in November is High School Musical.
There we go. All right, everybody. That's my
I'm sure I'll be back on the show before the next production goes up. So we'll be in soon.
Man, no, you know you always call in. We worldwide know whether you like it or not. You know what I'm saying? That's how we do it here on Jimmy's Underground Radio Network and all. Yeah. Maybe they will give us some love this time. You know, maybe they will give the children this love if they realize, you know, where they went wrong at. Because they're all falling down, Stray J. Blues man.
What I'm going to do right now is.
What are you going to do right now?
I'm gonna wind it down, and I will say, in the words of Puff Daddy, we ain't going nowhere, cause it's HWCC for life. And thank y'all for having us all. All right.
There we go.
Good night.
Ain't no love in the heart of the city. Ain't no love in the heart of time. Ain't no.
Love in the heart of the city. Yo, yo, yo. Fed secretly gather evidence in Africa lobbying case under Foreign Intelligence Service Act. You see Bobby Rush, you see Danny Davis. Take me out here now. When everybody was tripping on the NSA stuff, y'all was like, nah, man, Obama gotta have that. Then they turned around and do what? They got y'all. Check this out, everybody. Oh, go check it out right now. Hold on. Let me set up for y'all perfectly. Here we go. Y'all here? Oh, man.
Federal court records filed late today reveal the government secretly obtained evidence in the case against Chicago political activist Prince Asi.
Now tonight's IC report, there's a surprising revelation in the African lobbying case against two Chicago men. Even though the charges involve politics and trade sanctions against the nation of Zimbabwe, the I team has learned that federal agents gathered evidence under a law that is used to track terrorist threats.
ABC 7 investigative reporter Chuck Gowdy joining us tonight with details. Chuck.
Kathy Allen, federal court records filed late today reveal the government secretly obtained evidence in the case against Chicago political activist Prince Asiel Ben Israel under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, a controversial law known as FISA. That law allows U.S. law enforcement agencies to secretly gather evidence for the purpose of thwarting domestic terror plots. Electronic surveillance or physical searches were conducted in the case against Prince Asiel Ben Israel and co-defendant C. Gregory Turner. That evidence collected under a law normally reserved for terrorist cases. While there is nothing to indicate a terror threat by any of those charged or involved in the case, the use of FISA in a case such as this points to the expanded use of a widely criticized government law enforcement tactic. When such covert measures are used to gather evidence, prosecutors must notify defendants under the FISA law. It may be that the intercepted emails or phone calls originated with intelligence gatherings surrounding Zimbabwe dictator Robert Mugabe. It was his regime that prompted U.S. trade sanctions. According to federal charges unsealed yesterday in Chicago, the men allegedly arranged trips by U.S. government officials to meet with Mugabe, and afterward, Illinois officials promised to deliver information to then-President-elect Barack Obama about lifting the economic sanctions. Federal prosecutors say email evidence shows that an Illinois state senator met with Zimbabwe's president. The senator is not identified, but tonight, an attorney for State Senator Donnie Trotter of Chicago tells the I-Team Mr. Trotter is the unnamed state senator referred to in the complaint. Trotter's attorney had no comment on any aspect of the case, and Mr. Trotter has not been charged with wrongdoing. Two Chicago congressmen also go unnamed and uncharged in the paperwork. Representatives Danny Davis and Bobby Rush both say, however, that they did nothing wrong. Alan,
got it. All right, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck. Resulting in charges against two Chicago men.
Our investigative reporter, Ted Gowdy, is working the story.
Alan, Kathy, longtime Chicago Congressman Danny Davis is seeking legal counsel tonight because he says he was lobbied by one of those charged in today's federal case. Davis and Congressman Bobby Rush are among four Illinois politicians wrapped up in an effort to lift U.S. economic sanctions against the African nation of Zimbabwe.
We believe that no African-American child should ever be afraid to ride a bicycle.
Longtime Chicago political activist Prince Asiel Ben Israel is charged with accepting nearly $3.5 million from Zimbabwe officials to help dictator Robert Mugabe shake American trade sanctions. Charged with the 72-year-old Ben Israel is C. Gregory Turner, a Chicago business developer who is 71 years old. According to federal charges, the men arranged trips by U.S. government officials to meet with Mugabe, and that afterward, Illinois officials promised to deliver information to then-President-elect Obama about lifting the economic sanctions. They lobbied a caucus of state legislators on behalf of Zimbabwean officials and did so, having failed to apply for a Treasury Department license to engage in lobbying. Tonight, a spokesman for Congressman Danny Davis confirms that he was briefed by Ben Israel, is now seeking legal counsel, and expects to meet soon with federal officials. Authorities haven't named the other Chicago representative who was lobbied, but the charges say they sponsored legislation to remove sanctions on Mugabe's regime. Davis and Congressman Bobby Rush were the Illinois congressmen who co-sponsored that bill. This statement just in from Congressman Rush now. I had been scheduled to travel to Africa as part of an official delegation in 2009, he writes. If my itinerary had been shared with anyone connected with Zimbabwe or Zimbabwe officials, I had no knowledge of it. Zimbabwe was not included in my itinerary, which did include several countries. Rush says, due to sudden illness, I did not travel with the delegation. This is the first I've heard of this. I have not been questioned, and I am not a cooperating witness. Also, I have not been notified by the U.S. Department of Justice that I am Representative B in the complaint. I have not retained private counsel, and I see no need to do so at this time. One of those charged, Ben Israel, was in federal court today, released on his own recognizance. The other man, Mr. Turner, is believed to actually be in Israel. There's a federal warrant for his arrest.
Congressman Russ saying he's got no connection whatsoever.
That's what he says in this statement.
Right. Okay.
Sure. Okay. Trayvon Martin case, and I could tell that you were speaking from the heart, and tell me about that.
Well, you know, I think all of us were troubled by what happened, and any of us who are parents can imagine the heartache that those parents went through. It doesn't mean that Trayvon was a perfect kid. None of us were. We were talking off stage. You know, when you're a teenager, especially a teenage boy,
right.
You're going to mess up, and you won't always have the best judgment. What I think all of us agree to is that we should have a criminal justice system that's fair, that's just. And what I wanted to try to explain was why this was a particularly sensitive topic for African-American families, because, you know, a lot of people who have sons know the experience they had of being followed or being viewed suspiciously. We all know that young African American men disproportionately have involvement in criminal activities and violence for a lot of reasons, a lot of it having to do with poverty, a lot of it having to do with disruptions in their neighborhoods and their communities, and, failing schools and all those things. And that's no excuse.
Good night, everybody, and may your God be with you. I'll see y'all tomorrow on New Music Thursday, Hit It Avenue.